Let's get back to the study we were discussing.
I'd like to talk just a little bit about the rationale of the study, because at the time the study was designed, there were two simultaneous things going on. One, that there was an increasing acceptance of the fact that intraperitoneal therapy had become the best alternative for primary treatment of ovary cancer. Simultaneously, there was this breaking news about bevacizumab, and there were no clinical trials that really allowed us to combine the two into a single treatment for patients. And so in order to find out whether or not combining the two is possible and tolerable, it's important to go into a phase 1-2 study to look at the toxicity rates, make sure that there's no adverse interaction between the drugs, and things continue to turn out at least as good, if not better. And the goal of our study and other studies that are being done under the GOG's umbrella, the GOG is the Gynecologic Oncology Group, which represents the leading centers for gynecologic oncology care across the United States and even into sites in Europe and Asia and Australia. But there was no established way to combine these agents, and so the idea was to do a series of pilot studies to try to see how best to combine the drugs together so that the next study that can be done by the GOG in a large randomized fashion is to really make sure that this combination can be tested safely and really we can move on to a new standard of care, which would probably, we hope, will include bevacizumab as well as platinum and Taxol. So that was the rationale of the study that we set up.
Just to enlarge a little bit on that background, can you talk about what was known at that point and now what is known now in terms of the side effects and toxicity of bevacizumab and whether there are any particular concerns about using that agent in the face of intraperitoneal therapy?
Well, I think that bevacizumab is a remarkably well-tolerated drug. It has some logical consequences that, again, understanding the physiology of the kidney and how VEGF works, it's not surprising that over time there's a certain amount of proteinuria that shows up in the urine, that there are bleeding and clotting problems which can occur, although the frequency is low, and hypertension is a fairly common side effect. Now, none of those side effects are deal breakers in the context of a single agent. The difficulty comes in that in first-line treatment of ovary cancer, all of these patients have had an aggressive surgical procedure. So putting bevacizumab into the patient who has recently had surgery is a high-risk circumstance, and one has to be very careful to make sure that you're not promoting the formation of new blood clots, heart attacks, strokes, some of the things that would be associated with bevacizumab. There's also a separate issue in that bevacizumab would interfere with new blood vessel formation during wound healing. And in a patient who has just had an 18-inch incision in order to do a maximal tumor debulking, interfering with wound healing is not a trivial issue either. So for a number of reasons, it was important to do this. Finally, the other issue that was in the background is in 2006, there was a report to suggest that perforation of the small bowel was a not uncommon side effect of bevacizumab in patients with ovarian cancer. And that really gave us a serious concern as we began to think about combining things together. Patients frequently will have bowel surgery and anastomoses of small bowel or even large bowel before they would go on to primary therapy. And having those patients receive bevacizumab early on in their course might conceivably lead us to bad outcomes.